Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Bacon Expressions. Did I say bacon? Bacon Expressions. Thanks for being here. I'm here with my brother, as always, Wesley Fox, and I am Jonathan Fox. Today, you know, it's the first episode of 2019, and we just want to talk about a bunch of stuff about 2019. We got a bunch of stuff prepared. But first of all, Wes, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Starbucks Refreshers. It's a sparkling juice blend with real coconut water and real fruit juice and, of course, caffeine. And zero alcohol because I intend to work out. After we record this, I'm going to work out. So don't feel like drinking before or hitting the gym. Doesn't seem like the best thing to do. So for this one, I'm going to be dry, but I'm going to be caffeinated. So what are you drinking?
Well, after you said that, I had switched to coffee. So I'm drinking very cheap coffee from my corporate work that's still in my thermos.
Ah.
That's life, guys. That's life right there.
You can't waste it. You can't waste it. I'm not going to pour it out.
It's a weird pleasantness to it, even though it sucks. It's like diner coffee, you know, where it just has this warm, shitty, like, homey feel to it.
It's familiar.
Yeah. It's like you know you're in a safe place. Maybe not the best place, but you're safe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just to be clear, I can speak for myself. I'm not planning on going dry or anything for January. I know that's a thing that some people are doing. I intend to go dry in February because it's the shortest month. And that's really the extent of New Year's resolutions that I'm going to be doing in terms of alcohol because, I love wine. And then, I have to lose some holiday weight as well. You stuck to your regimen, right? You didn't really gain any weight. So you're in good shape now heading into the new year.
I mean, I technically did. I haven't stepped on the scale or anything. And honestly, losing muscle mass and gaining fat at the same time, I don't know if the scale would actually tell me anything much different. But I did notice the classic belt notch change.
Yeah.
That's, I don't really need to step on the scale to realize that there's been a change.
Yeah. I could tell that the scale was telling me and the belt was telling me. And so it's every year. I mean, I basically fell off the wagon of my workout regimen in November. So I kind of knew this was coming. I usually tend to take my foot off the pedal and obviously gain a little bit of weight. So it's not like, this is like an annual thing for me. So it's not like every New Year's I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to get in shape. I'm going to lose weight. Like yada, yada, yada. Like, yeah, I'm doing it because I intentionally sat on my ass and ate whatever I wanted for about a month. Cause that's what I wanted. That's what I chose to do for the holidays. I wanted to relax. I wanted to eat whatever I wanted and pay for it in January. So here we are.
Well, and I'd say the only difference with me or with us, since me and Jesse are kind of on the same schedule when it comes to workout and diet, is that we allowed ourselves for the most part to eat what we wanted over the holidays, but we tried really hard not to skip the gym too much until like the last week, like right around Christmas and New Year's, that was just out the window. But like all the weeks leading up to it, up until almost, a day or two before Christmas, we were still hitting the gym. And I think that helped a lot. So during the whole November, December holiday season, for the most part, we were good. And then Christmas to New Year's was a fucking crapshoot. But that's not too bad to be, out of the gym for, a week and a half, 2 weeks. I think when it's all said and done, it's probably a full 2 weeks. I don't know. I think that gave us a decent start for January because we weren't starting from zero. But we definitely, 2 weeks of eating whenever you want when you're doing the clean stuff. Definitely, that doesn't take long, man. All the Christmas food is just sugar and butter. It's not even that you're just eating more. Like, all the best food that you cheat for on Christmas is just the worst. It's awesome.
I think health-wise, it's to do it in a way where, yes, you're gaining some weight and you're definitely not eating what you should, but it's only for a short period of time and then you behave yourself after that. I base this on nothing, but I have a feeling that health-wise, that's okay.
I think that's okay. Yeah, I think that's okay,
too. You get back to your normal status quo within, I think I can lose the weight and get to my status quo by the end of January. So it's not like I look myself in the mirror like, oh my God, what have I done? Like, it's not, And I think that's the key. You can't. You can fall a little bit, but you can't let yourself fall too far. Like, you got, what, like 2 weeks? I went probably almost 6 weeks. So I got a little bit. I got more work to do. I kind of already knew that. And definitely the gut, the belt was opening up. So that is how we're all. That's how you and I are feeling personally about 2019 heading in. What about? Well, let's start off with like a really broad generalization of a question that we try not to get political, and I don't want to, but I don't want to talk about like particular like policies. I want to talk about in general about like the world and about the future. Like, are you starting into 2019? Do you feel a little bit more optimistic, a lot more optimistic, neutral, or pessimistic based on, you know, what happened in 2018 and what like 2019? So like, you can, yeah, I mean, you can talk about whatever you want. It can be like the world, hunger, freedom, science, like whatever. I was just kind of thinking that because the things we're going to talk about cover a lot of different like disciplines. So that's why I want to kind of start off a little general here and just be like, what's your sense? What is the force telling you? Like, what's the
with the force? What I'm feeling from the force, and I base this off of nothing and just pure feeling, pure feeling. And I think it's really honest for people to start statements that way when they're pure opinion. I base this off of nothing but my own feelings. As opposed to being like held up to the grill and being like, oh no, I had no facts. Like, why don't you lead with that, you dick? Oh, this is all opinions. You can't hold me responsible for what I say. So for me, like personally, I feel very optimistic about 2019 because of my outlook and my goals. But I also think 2019 and everything right now is very not uncertain, like the world's going to flip over into world war or anything like that. Like we're in the height of the Cold War or anything, even though it is a weird new Cold War. I feel okay about it, and I feel at least my optimistic self that at some point the pendulum is going to start to swing back, and this is like a slap in the face that we needed, you know, in science and in politics and in just like a lot of different parts of our lives where we might have been slipping, and this is what we're seeing the repercussions of, and I'm hoping the pendulum swings back, and I feel like I'm seeing the beginning of that, even though I'm not expecting any miracles. I'm expecting a lot more of the same. but I feel like the natural way that things tend to work each other out and to swing back and forth, I feel optimistic about. Now, whether that happens soon enough, I really don't know. I just have that feeling.
Yes, that's what I asked. I wanted to know what your spidey sense was telling you. I guess like reading. I mean, not just the news, but just things in general, like new science breakthroughs and just how we're kind of changing, because things are changing, like, and there's not really, you can put a positive or negative on it until you're 20 years, you know, 10, 20 years in the future. And you can look back and be like, yeah, that was good. Or no, that was a terrible idea. And I don't know, my feeling that I base on, you know, my sense of 2019, which I base on nothing but my own feelings, is that I think that some of the craziness is going to die down a little bit, like some of the real kind of tension. I think some of the worst tensions, I think, are now, some of them are behind us. And I think the ones that are going to carry into 2019, we're already kind of accustomed to. And I do feel like that in some areas that I think things are getting better. I think some of the conflict in the world is actually, some of it seems to be moving closer towards a conclusion and towards a peace. And that's a good sign. Some of the just things that were scaring us shitless a year ago appear to be resolved and appear to at least be like everyone's kind of taking a step back. And science wise and just innovation wise, I mean, that continued to march forward in 2018. And I mean, in general, like extreme poverty largely remained. I think a lot of these measurements of just the human experience in 2018, it really did not, the dial really moved in some ways down and some ways up. And I think that's going to continue into 2019. I think maybe just some of the insanity and some of the like, oh my God, I cannot believe I live on this planet right now, or I don't want to live here anymore. I don't think we're going to have as much of that in 2019. So that is my feeling.
That's very easy for us to say from where we stand. But anybody that's living in a zone where it's like, oh my God, why the fuck is this happening on our planet, and that hasn't stopped yet, has a way different opinion, I think. I think I'm just feeling a little bit more optimistic because I do feel like there is a little consensus that isn't going like completely overboard and that's swinging back. But I don't see policy or see anything like huge like actually swinging back. I just have that feeling, and I want to be optimistic and a part of the side of like, you know, maybe we're going that direction, but I don't have like a nice easy warm feeling like everything's going to be okay.
No. Well,
because it's still very disconcerting, and I'm just thinking like, as long as we're on like a shorter pendulum swing and we're just not at the beginning and it's not going to hit the bottom. And for 5 more years, like, you know, like, I'm just hoping that's not the case, you know, and we just hit around the bottom of it right now. But it might not be.
Yeah.
It does keep getting lower.
Well, there's a couple – the things I guess we wanted to talk about today are some of the things that should make us feel better about the future. And science – obviously for us, it's going to be science and technology. We're going to talk about that. We make allusions to politics, but we definitely don't want to waste an hour of your life talking about that. There are entire channels dedicated to that. So if you want that, go over there.
Yeah, that's not what this is for.
No, not at all. So
do you want to start first? Or?
No, tell about we'll talk about the source material, the website you found and you shared with me.
All right, so I just like this list. It was just a simple list through my regular news scrolling. It's not like I digged or dived deep through anything. It was just a very simple list that I got through Yahoo News. That was another website through Best Life. And it was just 15 major breakthroughs, you know, in science for 2019. Like, why not click on that? I will tell you that the entire list, some of it doesn't seem that feasible. Some of it's a little clickbait. To get you in there, but I think a lot of them are worth talking about, and it was a really good way to start 2019, because we could always end 2019 with revisiting this episode and our discussion, and we could talk about how ridiculous this article was and that we even had this conversation, or maybe we're like, damn, one of those things happened, there is like a silver lining, even though we're going to have a conversation that the world hit a new low, and it's not better, and that might be sad. Maybe one of these stories happened, and the end of 2019 will be cool. Yeah,
and this is, obviously I'll put the link in the show notes. It's from Yahoo Finance originally, or no, I'm sorry, Best Life, you're right, but Yahoo Finance cites it on their website, so I'm not sure who the... I guess it has to be Best Life.
Yeah. We're not super good at diving in, and we have these awesome like articles we sourced. Anyone could have accidentally came across this super easily. So we just thought it'd be an easy way to start off the year to talk about it.
Yeah, and there's 15, and we're not going to talk about all 15. Although I mean we want to, but I think that would go way past the hour we promised to limit ourselves at. And also, I think we kind of figured that we should just talk about the ones that we happen to know we know more about than the others. And that way we're not just, I mean, we're not experts in any of these 15 things, but like there's some of them that I think you and I know a little bit more about just from, you know, all the science reading we've done in the past and a little bit of our education and background. And also just why we think like these are the most exciting to us. And then of course we'll probably mention the ones that we think are just fucking bullshit. Cause you're right. Some of these are obviously clickbait.
it'd be cool and all, but we've been like following some of these for a while, for most of our childhood, and we're like, no, that's not happening next year. I know that's not happening next year.
I remember reading about this breakthrough that was going to come in 2001, so
I gave up. You can't fool me again. All right, so my first one I think is that's really cool is DNA storage. Now, I think this feasibly is at least has decent technology in it. Whether it's going to be cost effective to be done on a major scale, I don't know. But the concept is using DNA, human DNA, and the four bases of it to store ones and zeros essentially for our data. And you could store, you know, terabytes and terabytes of information in tiny amounts. And, you know, depending on the conditions that you hold it in, or maybe even if it's in something that replicates, I don't know enough about it, but you could store this information indefinitely in a small area. I mean, I know indefinitely is different because DNA is very sensitive, but it's still extremely interesting. Because it says researchers found that just a few grams of DNA can store an exabyte of data. That is one quintillion bytes for those who are counting, and hold it safely intact for thousands of years. That's just super interesting. Yeah. And it also thinks, like, if we could really code DNA that accurately that we could save our own ones and zeros to digital quality that we would expect. Because we always know there's, you know, mutations and this and that, so I don't know how they're going to account for that and how this is going to be better than our regular storage, but it is a very interesting application to study customizing DNA in extreme form without even scratching the surface and the implications of, you know, human DNA modification.
I think the one thing I think that it's mentioned here, and I think what they're referring to synthetic DNA, and I think that they use it in such a way that it's not reproducing itself, because that's where you get a lot of the mutation and the gene kind of mishaps that happen in the biological system. So I think that's their way. It's storage, and I think the way they're going to extract it is they're just going to extract whatever, you know, and just read it, rather than have it reproduce itself in multitudes of cells and things like that. So I think that's why they're confident that they can safely keep it intact for thousands of years, and that they're not this is not going to be an organism. And the reason, and I think the other thing that I read this at the bottom, because this one I was going to put on the list of things that I thought were, I've read about it before, and I know it's something that people want to try, but it's just something that seems like we're still pretty far off, because we're still getting to know DNA in general. So to start, you know, using it in a non-biological sense seems like that's further away than just understanding DNA in humans and whatever. But then I thought I probably have that backwards. It's probably easier to use synthetic forms of this than it is to, you know, manage it in a living organism. And the reason, and it says next year the first commercial DNA storage service, Harvard Life Labs catalog, is set to launch, and a prototype machine from Cambridge Consultants, which can be encoded a terabit per day, is expected to roll out the same year. So these two startups are preparing to launch in 2019, and I think that's why this thing is listed as a breakthrough of 2019. Does it mean like their technology works and is practical? Who the hell knows? But they feel confident enough to officially launch. First of all, have a prototype, and secondly, actually have a company, provide a service, a DNA storage service. So it's, I don't know. Like, I'm actually, after I've read that little bit, and maybe it is something that might actually be used in 2019. And, if it ain't broke, you know, don't fix it. You know, nature already has the solution to this, and why are we bothering with silicon chips anymore? But I like this one too. Now that I was gonna poo poo on it, but now that I've read that, I'm like, actually this sounds a lot cooler and a lot closer to reality than I thought.
Well, I mean, I don't know how many practical applications this is really gonna have, but I think the novelty of it and somebody thinking this is a solution or just like another third, fourth version of a backup, and it's just advancing the technology. And I don't know, like, maybe this will be, you know, the crazy genetic revolution is started by technology by these companies, and it ends up being a really messed up thing, you know. So the one thing I'll say about all science breakthroughs and about everything about the new age of science is it's like equal parts amazing and equal parts terrifying. I really think so. I think that's what the future is right now. Like, I really start enjoying the future, and then I start to have a different thought process about the future. And I'm not saying I'm bipolar, but
but mentally ill, to be sure.
Yeah, but something like starts happening, and they're like, no, the future is freaking terrifying. Like, it's getting taken to the next level. Like, did you just read the article today that 61% of your Android apps are still feeding your personal information to Facebook, even if you don't have Facebook or ever had one? I'm not super surprised by it. I'm glad the information is coming out, and I hope there's a new age of, like, privacy when it comes to it. But there's just certain weird things about, like, the future that are just all like, are we already so lost that it's just too late? And I'm gonna root and vote for privacy in our future, but a lot of these things just get normalized.
Indeed, indeed. Well,
anyway, what's the next one? I'm sorry.
Well, you started off with one that was basically talking about the hard drive of, you know, the hard drive growing in size and capacity and using an entirely different basis for storage, whether it's biological information or zeros and ones. I'm going to go to what the microprocessor might be the future is, and that's the third one here, quantum computing. Now, I've read about quantum mechanics in numerous books and articles, and I've heard it mentioned many a times. I've actually read some science fiction novels based on quantum mechanics, and I still have not a fucking clue how it works. All I know is basically two things that are a massive distance from each other. You change one, the other one will change.
Quantum entanglement.
Yeah.
Quantum entanglement. Well, we don't understand how it works either. It just works.
But they've found the quantum mechanics that they have observed and they can predictably, you know, cause is becoming the basis for a computing system. And instead of using just binary, it's going to use the qubit, which is a word that I don't understand. Maybe I should have looked that up. What I do know is basically, and all I think us like laypersons need to know is that the potential for quantum computing is much, much more powerful than existing computers. And our existing computers are pretty powerful, just because they've grown in power almost exponentially for the last few decades.
Because they've been going along Moore's Law, as you know, any nerd out there knows, which is really fucking awesome. But it does have its limitations, and they are using different ways for, like, different chipsets and having multiple cores, you know, like, built in on each other and stuff to try and break the rules of Moore's Law, but that's still going to have its own limitations in silicon, and this is hopefully going to be our future. So what's really crazy is, even though there's these new physical limitations of Moore's Law, like, what if, almost on the same scale, it, like, continues to be a true ratio and a true law?
Well, I think this can, quantum computing. I think so. Well, the real, like, the people that are really just like drinking the Kool-Aid for this stuff think that this will shatter the Moore's Law rate. Like, it'll be so much faster than Moore's Law.
That's so cool.
Because of it has and if you want to, I mean, I'm not going to try to explain it. All I know is that it does not work anything like our existing binary system or the existing microprocessors and silicon chips and circuitry. It does not work that way at all. It has an entirely different basis for it, which allows it to do things that our existing technologies cannot do.
I mean, I think there was a news article like a year ago or something, or maybe earlier this year, where like a Chinese satellite was the first thing to have like a quantum entangled like signal that went back and forth. And they really think, and I mean, it probably is because we don't really understand enough about it, is a complete, you know, just a unhackable like transmission of information.
That's the key. They've been able to, I don't know what the distance was, but they were able to establish like basically chain, you know, influencing one proton and having the other particle change at a massive distance, and it was instantaneous.
So yeah, it breaks the speed of light.
Yeah, and they don't know
why, but it fucking works, and we're fucking using it, and we know how to do it. How insane is that?
I mean, think about
during the Renaissance, where they started to use like laws of nature that they didn't understand, but they knew how to figure them out, like just like whether it's navigating the globe or doing this or that. That's what this is right now. It's like we don't know how it works, but it always works, and we use it. and they have their own bullshit theory, and we don't really have a good one. And it's fucking nuts. It's so cool.
I love. I mean, they talk about quantum computing here as a means of creating new powerful machine learning techniques so that they these algorithms are basically able to work through problems a lot faster and allow for innovations in science and through like all these kind of evolutionary learning. So in other words, it can solve problem like extremely complex problems a lot faster, or solve problems that currently we just don't have the computing capacity to solve. And in space, and when you're dealing with, you know, tons of moving bodies and these things, you're going to require a lot more computing power that we have than we have right now. We seem to think we can do anything with a computer, but there are, we still have limits. But the thing I'm really thinking of is communication, instantaneous communication between stars. Like we've seen like the communications in Star Trek where they're able to talk to each other through subspace, which is a thing they invented. And they can talk to each other almost in real time, like over a bunch of light years. In Star Wars, you have communications over huge distances. And they just, you know, for the sake of, you know, the narrative, that's what they do. But I always thought that was impossible. Like, there's no possible way if you can't break the speed of light. But the more I read about this quantum mechanics and quantum computing, it might actually be possible. It might be that you can influence two different objects at two different... And if you can do that, that means you can communicate. And that's what I'm psyched.
How far can it go? Like, wouldn't it be a really big deal and a really important mission to like immediately send one of these like quantum entangling things that could last a ridiculous amount of time, like a Voyager, out into deep space as fast as possible and see how long we can keep communicating with it?
Yeah,
and we should do that like right now. And it's like, and if we could keep it up, like, we'll do the radio regular one, but we'll obviously keep using the other one, too, at the same time. And we could have been able to communicate with both Voyagers for an insane amount of time. And if the mission was just based on this, and we tried to do it even longer than that, we could figure out, like, does this work even out of our heliosphere?
Yeah. I mean, well, like...
And that could be the interstellar, interspace thing. We could always figure out like our huge mission if it was going around like for 100 light years somewhere. We could find out what happened.
Yeah, and I think
that'd be nuts.
There's also like the like what? How long is I think to communicate with Mars? I think like they've said
7 minutes.
It's some like 7 minutes to get there, 7 minutes to get back, or whatever it is. Like it's not real time, obviously, and that's the nearest planet that we have, I think.
Yeah.
Well, at any given time, it's either Mars or Venus, one or the other. I don't really think that one is permanently... I don't know. I'm basing...
No, because sometimes it's a lot longer, depending on where it is in orbit. But I think when we try to do most of our missions, it's like the shortest delay we could do, hopefully. So, I think it's around 6 or 7 minutes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I didn't have more. I was just going to say I'm not an expert on that, so that might be wrong. Please fact check me.
But anyway, like, I just think this could have a lot of like real positive, like real potential for space travel, space communication, space colonization, because it could potentially shorten the distance between planets, between stars. I mean, we still need to figure out how to get to another star within a lifetime, but I think this actually demonstrates that there is a possibility that we can connect in a way that's faster than any speed of light or any current technology. And I'm, in addition to the scientific, anything that these powerful computers can help with science and technology and research, and those are all things that are just built in that I think it's going to help everything. But I think in particular, I think space is where it could really open, you know, where we're currently very, very limited. I think it could start opening doors for us.
Well, and here's another interesting point, because there's the obvious military applications that are what are really driving this technology right now. Something, unhackable transmission.
Yep.
And if unhackable transmission becomes a normal between the super or, you know, medium mega powers or whatever you want to call them, just through a lot of the higher nations that have the technology to do it, it almost like levels the playing field in a weird espionage way that's really bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's like certain things will be unhackable and like we'll just know that. And that's insane.
Yeah. Facebook will be able to extract information from you safely and not lose it. I mean, you always got to think, what does this mean for Zuckerberg? So, all right. Next up.
Yeah. What's my next one?
Yeah.
All right. So my next one was a better look at the black holes. Now, there was this really awesome thing that was started like a year or so ago. I'm not going to be able to quote all the details of it that well. It was just a story I loosely followed like for like the past couple years, and it was the fact that they were using like all the major radio telescopes that they could across the world to essentially make a telescope, a radio telescope that's the size of the planet, in order to view and potentially get the most accurate picture ever of the black hole, the supermassive one in the middle of the Milky Way. Now, like, what's more awesome than that? And then they said, like, it was going to spend a year, like, collecting the data, because they obviously all these intermittent times and the spin of the Earth and all these things being coordinated and stuff. And then, like, a year on supercomputers to extrapolate the data. And that's insane, too. Like, just... and those might have been those first articles that I'm still, like, haven't read in over a year or so as an oversimplification, because I didn't see any new science about it for a while, and I didn't really read any new stuff. There wasn't, like, an awesome new huge headline about the best picture of the black hole in the middle of the Milky Way, so I just felt like it took longer than they thought. And now, like, one of these is that a better look at a black hole, and it's pretty much saying, talking about the science project... And it's called the Event Horizon Telescope. Oh, my God. How dope is that? Coolest fucking shit ever.
Man, didn't they see the movie?
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
Why not? You know, why, this is like yeah, that company like calling its new innovation Skynet. It's like,
yeah. Come on. Yeah, like sometimes like sci-fi being self-fulfilling prophecy is like, should I really write this book? Should I really inspire scientists for this? Like, is a warning really what we need? How about just not planting the seed?
I mean, we find planets everywhere, which I'm not too surprised. We've been kind of making enormous strides in our ability to observe things beyond our own solar system. In increasing degrees of accuracy, realism, finding super Earths, which I think is just hilarious, because I mean, it's just a giant rock. We're just surprised to find a rock bigger than ours. I don't know why we should, but like it's a short easy way to explain to somebody what they found instead of like a large solid planetoid or whatever the other like technical term is. Like, oh, it's a super Earth. But I mean, observing black holes, which may just sound like gazing into the stars and everything, by finding out how this shit works, like it has secondary effects and secondary like potential for all sorts of other things. I mean, this is a phenomenon that we can only see from a distance, and we haven't been able to see that. We're just kind of guessing where these
there's
things
so,
are.
Yeah,
we
there's
can't
so
see
much
them.
Theory. There's yeah, so much solid theory, math. Basically. It's a lot of theory, but there's a lot of solid math, and a lot of the math has been proven right, which is really interesting, but then there's also been weird stuff that we didn't know. And so, like, this is actually a big deal, and to think that we could put together the best that we can image of our own black hole, our own, like, next black hole, even though apparently there might be lots of other small ones in the galaxy. We're not sure. I read that shit too. Maybe a real astronomer could tell us.
Black holes.
But that's the main one that we all know is there, you know, that isn't like a big guess. And just a clear picture of it, because we don't know the event horizon, we don't know what it looks like. And it was just really exciting, and it was announced a couple years ago, and I just kind of forgot about it because it wasn't a big headline, even though it was a big headline when the project started, that they were even doing, like, a planet-sized telescope to, like, look at the black hole, and it would take a year to do all this. I just remember telling Jesse about it, just saying all those facts in a row, and just being all a nerd and pumped about it. And she's like, yeah, that sounds cool, like, the first time you told me. I'm like, but come on, doesn't it sound super awesome just because I changed my voice? But yeah, so hopefully we're going to get a lot more data on this. We're going to see a lot more and find out a lot more about our closest one that we've observed on such a massive scale, and just everyone connecting on this project. And I'm sure it took a lot of coordination with a lot of different radio telescopes all over, and just an insane amount of math to even coordinate them to put this picture and put it together. It's just kind of a cool global effort to figure out our own black hole that's right next to us, and it's just a very beautiful thing altogether, I think. So I can't wait for that information to come out more.
Nice. All right, ready for the next one?
Yeah. What do you got?
All right, I'm going to switching from the hard stuff to, well, actually, no, this is a hard science too. Immunotherapy advances for treating cancer. This has been like the biggest thing in serious diseases or conditions for the last 4 or 5 years. These new immunotherapies that uses your own immune system to help fight cancer. So it's basically like reprogramming your own T cells and other things. They call them chimeras because they're basically trying to program it so your attacks only the tumor cells.
That's so gangster.
Yeah, CAR T. Yeah, and it's called like CAR T, and then the C stands for chimera or chimeric.
Yes. Oh my god.
So it's a chimeric is also a technical term for a type of like blending of different DNA phenotypes, or maybe not phenotypes. I don't know what the exact word is. Anyway, but this is not just like promise. This actually has proven results. There are immunotherapies out there that have dramatically improved outcomes for certain types of cancers. The drawback is that these things don't just, like, immunotherapy does not treat cancer. It treats a specific type of tumor profile or tumor mutation. So they've been targeting specific types of tumors, because there's basically a bunch of different types of tumors. Like, there's, like, a bunch of different, some lung cancers are very similar, for example, but there's enough differentiation in them that immunotherapy might be highly effective in almost curing one, and basically curing one of them, and having no impact on the other type of lung cancer. That's the drop. So you're not seeing like a cure for cancer in the sense that we're curing all of cancers. That's not what immunotherapy is going to do. It's basically going to start knocking them down like dominoes, and it has. It's basically taken cancers that are, you know, tumor phenotypes that were basically death sentences, and actually providing outcomes where the cancer is gone and does not come back. And at least the follow-up data on the patients that took it originally in the earlier clinical trials is demonstrating that there's a very, very low recurrence rate, that it doesn't, it's not coming back.
Because of the whole approach.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really given a chance to adapt like it can to chemotherapy. Basically, it learns how to withstand chemo. That's how it beats. That's why chemotherapy, if it's taken too late, won't work, because the tumor has enough in it to adapt and to mutate and basically find ways to survive chemo. Because I mean, you can survive chemo. That's why people are getting. It makes you very sick. It's terrible, but the human body can survive it. So there's always been this problem that tumors tend to find ways to endure and then become resistant, chemo resistant. I don't think that with these immunotherapies, you really do not have that problem, at least so far. And it's really promising because it's not just something that extends life a few months, because some cancers, some of these treatments, they're like, oh yeah, there's this new drug for whatever. Instead of, you know, living 10 months, you'll live 14 months. And those extra four months are still going to suck though. Like, that's not really what people, like, when they think of cure or they think of treatment, they're not thinking of a few more miserable months. They want something that'll extend their life by possibly years or maybe even cure it. And this is something that's much more closer to that than it is chemo. And that's why this is something that we're going to see more in 2019, because we've been seeing one or two new ones every year for the last few years. It's great shit, man.
That's exciting, because every time you donate to one of these charities that are trying to fight major diseases, and you're like, well, I mean, I know it's like good to do it in the long run and stuff, and it's good to keep on funding it, but like, what major stuff is really happening? Mm-hmm. Like, how much could my $100 do when it takes like, you know, $100 million to run this huge clinical trial that maybe didn't even push it forward or not? Like, it's really daunting. And to have breakthroughs like this, where you're like you said, it can knock it down like dominoes because of how effective it is and how many applications it has, as long as we keep on pushing it in those directions, is just insanely exciting. Like,
yeah.
Why? like, why not start getting, like, re-incited, excited about the entire science and the concept of maybe curing the disease, as opposed to being, like, you know, kind of a thoughtful, like, cry, and it's really awesome to say, but sometimes, like, it's just been so long that it's all, like, let's just have a realistic goal.
Yeah.
You know, just slow it down. Like, are we going to really cure it in our lifetime? Like, of course we should have that goal and think about it, but it just is very disheartening over the decades, I'd admit, for anyone. And that's so exciting.
To me, the first goal or objective is, I mean, we need to stop thinking cure, because we're just going to get disappointed every year. I mean, people have been wanting a cure for cancer for, like, almost a century. I think if we can make it so that no matter what cancer you're diagnosed with, it's not a death sentence. There is a chance you can beat it, and you're not going to it's not going to be 6 or 9 months. You'll have a couple of years to fight it, and those years are not going to be spent puking your guts out and losing weight. You know, if there's hope, like hope that you can beat it and, you know, live, you know, a long life, or even live, you know, five, you know, live 3 to 5 years with it. I think instead of, you know, stage 4 lung cancer is a death sentence. You got less than a year, and there's nothing anyone can do about it. I think if you take away that kind of doom and give every single person like some measure of hope that, look, this could work. It has worked before. It doesn't necessarily cure it. It doesn't necessarily work for everyone. But, like, this has a shot. This actually has a legitimate, like, not 100-to-1 shot, but actually, like, a 1 in 4, 1 in 5 shot of letting you live the rest of your life until you die of something else. So that's what I'm kind of hoping for. I don't really expect a cure for all cancers in my lifetime, but I do hope for that nobody gets that diagnosis and, you know, and it's a death sentence and it's just doom.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, that's a huge difference. It really is. And that's realistic. So one of the points of this is we skipped over some of these because we're like, why even talk about this? This isn't science. It's really going to happen. And we could at least, we're not going to talk about these topics, but I did want to mention a few of the ones that we purposely gloss over, because they're just upsetting that they're even on the list. They insult my intelligence. Robot surgeons. Now, we've had robot surgery for a lot of applications, and just the fact that it's going to advance a little bit more, you know, I'm not that surprised. It's just going to keep on going in that direction and get more fine, so why even have it on it? And then it shows this, like, image of, like, a robot thinking, like, oh, we're really going to have complete robot surgeons that are going to look like that android? Bullshit. Don't need that. 3D metal printing. Now, we already kind of have this, and it's just going to advance better. That's exciting, really awesome. But the article almost reads like there's a lot of applications that it's not, like, you know, it's not really used for anything serious. When they're trying to use it for serious stuff all the time, it's just going to keep on going the direction it is. It's pointless to bring up. It's just a little buzzword.
I almost got a company with a 3D printing, or almost got a that job with a 3D printing company. 3D printing. I was so... 3D printing
is awesome. It is the future.
I put down in my application and everything, because I had no experience in, at the time I was applying, I had no experience in this particular technology or even device, you know, devices in general. But I applied anyway because they said, you know, they prefer it, but it wasn't required. And I was like, look, I just want to work for you. I want to work for this company, because these are, I mean, as I think you and I have both said on this podcast a bunch of times, these are the replicators from Star Trek.
Yes, it's the future. It's so exciting.
These are replicators. These are the first replicators.
The first time anyone ever told me that this thing existed was our father, when I kept on drawing my own action figures that I wanted that they didn't sell in stores. I wanted the action figure to look like this. And he told us, like, in advanced science, they have these things, you know, that they'll use for, like, prototypes, you know. And, I mean, I don't know if it was actually additive or whether it was subtractive or whatever, but he described a 3D printer. And I was a very young child. And that inspired me to make my own custom toys. And as an adult, I think of the exact same thing.
Yeah.
100%. It's like,
action figures.
No, just any toy, anything I want. I just want to make what I want. It's like inspires the exact same giddiness as that. Like as a child is to make your own custom toys. Yes, that will be on the list. But realistic adult toys will also be on that list. It's still the same concept. Whatever like my little heart desires. Holy shit.
You're going to get a house with a garage. You're going to get one for the garage, and you're never going to leave the garage. Like, you're just going to be making shit all the time.
No, and the best part of it is that Jesse is all about it. So, like, it'll be, like, a nerd out together. Like, so 3D printing will become a household thing, not just, like, you know, something that breaks up a marriage. Because it will turn into something awesomely obsessive. No,
she'll
just, I swear.
Yeah, she'll come in there with you and be like, it's my turn.
Like, yeah, you're hogging it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I got one that I also wanted to throw out there that I think is just it's clickbait and it's fucking annoying because it's been a thing for 30 plus years, and that's flying cars.
Oh, you stole it from me. Yes. Fuck Dude. That shit. I don't want to see that shit. Now, there is the concept of actual, like, drones that could carry people that'll be able to fly over skies, and you take these little autonomized rides. And that's essentially how we're going to see flying cars, because you're not going to trust pilots out there. You know, and we're going to figure out a way to trust that system enough and have enough, like, plausibility for that. And I think we're going to see that in our future. But that's also not the picture that they fucking show. They show a picture that looks like a flying car that we're probably not going to actually see. It's clickbait. It's bullshit. But we might have, like, the personal, like, autonomized, like, hover drone delivering the super elite, like, helicopters within the next 5 to 10 years. I do think so.
This just screams liability to me and just inherent risk that, I mean, people freak out about, you know, driverless vehicles getting into accidents. These things are, the first crash is going to be all over the news. It's not, it just doesn't seem like what, I'm not really, I know it solves traffic problems, but that's really the only problem it's solving. Yes, it's cool to fly. It'd be cool to have your own helicopter. But like, to me, the problem it's solving is not really the most pressing problem. Alleviating traffic is something that it's yeah, pain in the ass, but really, I don't really think, I think there are more important things. I think electric cars are far more important, and they're far more realistic, and they're real, and we have them. This thing is $600,000 that they see picture here, and their little blurb on the right says, but expect the price to come down in 2019. I'm like, even if it's $500,000 or $400,000, it's still nowhere near practical. And
no.
All this to avoid traffic, and just think of the regulations that the NTSB is going to put on these things. It's just, or the FTA. I mean, all these, I think this thing's going to be a headache to implement, and it doesn't really solve. I mean, just get a fucking helicopter.
No, but I think what we are going to see is not this flying car concept and not one of these vehicles, because they're going to have all the insane regulations because they're still going to have a pilot. But I think as hover drones, like, are more accepted by the Federal Aviation, you're going to see these things because China is developing them and they're going to have their super elite and they're not going to care as much about the regulations because they don't care about the collateral damage as much. So I feel like there's going to be places like that that are going to advance the technology first. And then we'll all like want to play a little bit of catch up. And it's going to be like these little 8 or 4 copter, like, you know, drones that just somebody goes in and maybe there's a pilot on the ground somewhere. It's going to do these small little pickups and they have batteries that last like, you know, 30 minutes or something like that because they're just doing little 10-20 minute rides in a small, like, you know, super elite area. And that's the beginning of what we're going to see at the network. And it's never really going to be individual pilots because we should not just like start trying to expect people to be pilots. That's not how we're going to see flying.
There are a lot of people that can't handle driving.
I'm not pumped about it exactly because I'm not pumped about the Amazon wanting to like use drones to look for packages. Even though when it starts happening and it's the regular, I'm going to fucking use it. I'm sorry. I probably will. But I know there's still a statistical collateral damage that they're just going to take some bystanders out and it's going to be sad. And we're going to be like, why? Just so we could have, you know, 10 minute delivery time when we like destroy something and we need a replacement immediately.
Yeah, I did.
And we think about how awesome that is, and they're like, I don't know, only a couple people a year die.
And see, this, I guess I kind of am not too excited about innovations that really are not solving major problems. Like, that's why Alexa and Google Dot and all that stuff, yes, it's cool, but to me, those are toys. Like, being able to talk to your house, I mean, what, it's going to save you all of, like, 18 minutes of time out of your, you know, like 8 minutes of time here and there, grand total. And like, it's not saving
up
your life.
It's disgusting. Oh, my God. What you're giving up is, like, so bad. That's why, like, I don't know. Like, so, you know, the quote by, I think it was Carl Sagan, where he says, like, whether we're alone or not, it's, like, equal parts, like I don't know, fascinating or terrifying. Do you know the quote I'm talking about? Like,
yeah,
he thinks about, like, whether we're alone in the universe or not. I'm starting to think that almost applies to, like, a lot of other things and, like, the advancements of science and knowledge and, like, what we're capable of and what we know. It's, like, equal parts, like, awesome and freaking terrifying, because I love the future, but I'm seeing, like, the Star Trek future happening in front of us, but we don't have a benevolent system that's in control of it, and so it's fucking terrifying. So it's like kind of nuts to like see this stuff, because like the kid in me gets excited, but then like the adult in me is all like, no, this is no good. It's so like nuts.
Well, like I mean this stuff's been cool for a while, and like it, like some of these things, I just think of like how much money is spent and how much of our resources we spend on cars, for example. And taking aside the Tesla and electric cars, like cars have not really changed all that much in the last 20 years. They're a little safer, true, and their performance is a little bit better, and you can talk to them. And, I mean, there's all sorts of neat little gadgets in it, all right? So they're cooler, yes. But but they're still cars. They're basically fulfilling the same purpose. They're just slightly more, you know, pleasurable to drive. But honestly, if you talk to some people, it doesn't matter how many gadgets they have in their car. They're still stressed out when they're driving. Because they're trying to do four things at once, or, you know, they just drive like assholes, or they think everyone else on the planet drives like an asshole, and they're the only good driver on the planet. Stuff like that. Or cell phones. Like, the cell phone we have now is basically a tricorder. It's awesome. But people are buying new phones almost every year. And they're just, and the new apps are all basically for convenience and just cool little gadgets. And so much resource is going into that. That's what worries me a little bit. We still put a ton of resources into, like, solving real problems. I'm not saying we don't. We spend a shit ton of money on research, pharmaceuticals. Computer programming is used for all sorts of things that are benefiting mankind. I mean, it's not like we're not, but sometimes it does worry me that when people think of, like, the great innovations of, like, a certain year, they'll probably, like, talk about, like, whatever, this new app that was a breakthrough. Whereas this list that we're going on right now has, except for the flying car thing, really, these are legit, like, civilization-changing breakthroughs. But I just worry sometimes that we spend so much time trying to make it slightly easier to get in and out of our car by having, like, you know, a button you can press so you can open the trunks if your hands are full. Like, that was in a car commercial, and all these, like, buttons that allow you to open and shut doors in your car or just start the car without putting your keys in the ignition, all neat little gadgets, are not going to change anyone, but they're really not going to change anything in your life in the long term. You're still going to find things to get annoyed with. And it's I don't know. That's my little fucking rant on some new technologies just being of utterly no, just, they're just gadgets. They're just fucking gadgets.
So my next one, and this is one, like, it's hard for me to, like, talk about any sort of expert. So anybody that knows anything about this will probably know that I'm just scratching the surface or it's an oversimplification. But blockchain and blockchain-based privacy. What I understand about blockchain and what I understand about what it could do with databases that are interactive around entire systems and worlds for every corporation, every bank, every possible thing that you could possibly think of where we're keeping track of stuff, we want to make sure we're all on the same page, blockchain can be applied to in an insanely effective way. And it's kind of nuts. Like, it could really be applied to so many things, because the whole internet and everything about, like, you know, information is all in organizations and databases, and then there's inconsistencies sometimes and things that are supposed to be important, and this could take out a lot of them. And And if it can help with privacy, that would be insane, because that's a serious concern of mine. So I know it's an oversimplification. I know blockchain, we mostly think of it just based on cryptocurrency, but it's part of the way that keeps cryptocurrency honest, because of its over-redundancy and because it's decentralized like ledgers, which might not mean that much. But as I started to try and understand it, and as I've worked in the corporate world too, and I see how many systems are supposed to overlap and how much loss there is because of inconsistencies, and they just have to make up for it and their little rules and everything to try and figure it out and go around it. And blockchain can solve a lot of this stuff because everything's just the same on everyone's side all the time, no matter what. It's nuts, no matter where you are and whether you have the login or not. But, you know.
Yeah, this is the technological response to basically all the big news stories of the last like 10 years of data breaches and of the internet. Basically, we're now becoming aware of the deal we made with the internet, that we can do all these things for free, but in terms of money, in exchange we allow them to track information and track our movements and track what we're doing. That is how they're able to provide these things for free. Like email is free. The cost of using the internet is so insanely low now that, and a lot of these services that the internet provides that are just completely free, that we assume are free, you know, they always have been free. That was the thing they wanted. They like, all right, well, yeah, we won't charge for any of these things like a utility, but in a, you know, by saying you agree to this end user agreement, we're able to use some of your like de-identified information. Blockchain is the kind of counter reaction to that, that yes, I can, I, you know, maybe there are certain things that in order to use these products, in order for these amazing technologies to work, they need to have metadata. But like shopper profile, for example, which is what the website's talking about, creates a profile of the users built in blockchain, restricting what information big companies like Google can learn about you. And basically a better way of securing data or securing information that is just impossible to break, because it's not based on passwords or, you know, logins and everything like that. Blockchain, I have one story, but I don't know how it works, and I wish I could explain a little bit more. I have some, like, the most minimal idea, but I do know that there is this practice called Bitcoin mining, where basically these Bitcoins are generated through, you're basically solving these complex problems, and as you solve them, like you're given access to these new Bitcoins that are generated all the time, basically by solving the problem. So that's how they restrict. These things are, these massive problems are extremely difficult and take forever and require a lot of computing power. So
Most Bitcoin mining, you know, takes an insane amount of computer power and your processing power, and also has to be done in areas that have like low electricity and everything. Like, it doesn't cost a lot because it takes a lot of processing power. So I'm not sure if that applies to all sorts of blockchain.
Well, that's how that's
computing
how,
and how it no, has to be done.
No, the, but
the, because that, I mean, that definitely presents its own problems. But I think in the bigger picture, like, of course, you know, with a great technology that helps us, there's always going to be an expense to it. So I just didn't know enough about the technology to see if that's always a requirement.
The point is, you can't cheat. Like, they actually have something that, you know, we've assumed throughout our entire lives that everything is hackable. Everything is, eventually somebody's going to find a way in. Eventually security needs to be updated. That's why we have to download updates all the time to the software. Blockchain is something that, if they can find ways to mobilize it for other uses, is not breakable. And that's what they claim for this. And
interesting. So, I mean, if it's true and it keeps on being applied that way, it might be a way for the future to be a little bit less creepy. A little bit less creepy. It might be a way that we could start having a little bit more control over our privacy. There might be triple, quadruple, or just these huge, you know, to the nth degree redundancies to make sure that we're protected in a little bit of a better way until someone finds out to hack it. It might be a little bit of time for us to breathe. Because the future right now, and how often these hacks happen and everything, you almost have to think, like, my entire identity might get hacked in my lifetime. It might be a shit show, and I'm not sure how I'll handle it, but it might just be a bankruptcy that I have nothing, no control over. Like, you were talking about playing a weird, like, video game where, like, you know, you just had to accept at some point you'd have no control over, like, how bad it would suck.
Yeah, most games, like, you play them long enough, you can master it, and there's just things you don't have to worry about anymore. But then there's other kind of simulation and strategy games where there's always uncertainty, there's always going to be random events that are going to thwart you, and there's nothing you can do to prevent. There's, like, certain things you can reduce the risk, there's certain things you can prevent, but there's a great number of things you just have no control over, and you can only have only the slightest influence in the outcome, and you have to be able to cope with it in the game. And your ability to cope with it and adapt is how you score, not how you build. Like, most games are just build. Build up skills, build up your city, build up your empire, you know, whatever the game is, it's usually build. You know, the more you play it, the better you get at it, because that's what they want. They want you to play it nonstop. But this game is very frustrating. It's called Crusader Kings 2. And basically, you control a dynasty, and the head of the dynasty, basically. And so when you die, your character dies, you take over as the success, as the first person in line to take over the throne, or whatever your position is. So it's usually the eldest son or whatever, one of your kids. And if that kid, you know, that kid may, you want your kids might be idiots. So you might build up your character, you know, your king for his entire life, and then he dies when he's 49, and then you have to take over as his son, and his son's a nitwit. You can't, like, it's like in real life, you can't really, you know, you can't control how your kids are going to turn out. Like, I'm not talking about, it's not just about IQ, but just about, you may want your son to follow in your footsteps, or your daughter to. You have no control over that. Maybe they will, they probably won't. You know, you want them to be funny, you want them to be good looking, you have no real, but you really, there's, like, very minimal things you can do about that. And when it comes to dynasties and hereditary rule, and you're going to hand it down to your kid, you better, you know, all you can do is hope. And that kind of gets into the last one I wanted to talk about was the gene editing, the CRISPR, the genome editing advances, where I just said that we have no way of really controlling how our kids are going to turn out. Well, this technology suggests that we might in the future.
Nice thing.
Thank you. But this is a means of editing genes. They've been able to do it in the, I believe they've been able to do it in the womb. So, like, before they're born, when they're born, like, for example, if you want to prevent it, if you know they have a genetic disorder, you can edit the gene. And boom, they don't have it anymore. And they never will get it. So it's stuff like that. Those are the most obvious applications, like preventing genetic diseases and preventing, you know, basically extreme disabilities. You know, there is some controversy over whether, you know, is it right that if we can, you know, put an end to Down syndrome, should we? Or put an end to certain things that, you know, maybe they're disabled, but they're not, like, they can still live a normal life, and, you know, certain other disabilities that people feel like we should not be meddling in those things, but, you know, you don't know where the line is. And that's the ethical challenge. Mm-hmm.
See, equal part awesome, equal part scary. Because, like, what if, like, so, like, part of the reason that, you know, eugenics was ridiculous and it was awful and everything because of the humane factor of it, but also, like, science, like, disproving it, that also helped that it was, like, really inhumane and really messed up. But what if, like, we start going into this level of science and gene editing where you could start saying, well, this isn't disproven. This could actually, like, mm-hmm. change these things that are known, like, you know, we put it in these list of genetic disorders. That's a word that we use, you know. We have a whole list of them, and, like, they're actually scientific disorders, and we have a way to change that. Then all of a sudden, like, there's still this crazy human aspect of it that's there, but the fact that it being, like, completely wrong and dumbfounded and used for messed up reasons that are way more messed up than trying to help humanity and stuff, that gets taken out of it. And that's going to be a very interesting social discussion and a really ridiculous line in the sand that we're going to have to talk about in our lifetime.
And I remember back in school, like, I made this whole project out of, what if there was an ability to basically give kids advantages, increasing IQ, increasing athleticism, increasing physical attractiveness, And what are you going to do? Are you going to charge money for that? So that means only the wealthiest of families and parents can afford to give their kids these advantages. So, you know, what kind of inequality would you be building if you allowed that? Because then you truly have, like, you start providing a scientific basis for nobility, for, you know, royal blood and, you know, peasantry or whatever, you know, because it's so creepy.
Even though when you think about the advancement of humanity, it's not going to be used on a level playing ground right now. We're not in Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future yet. You know, so this is going to be applied to, like, today's rules in society, and it's going to suck.
And they are getting better at this. The CRISPR gene editing technology, every year they're getting better at it and more consistent at it. So 2019 could see, like, some stories about new results and new abilities of how they can edit genes and everything. Now, of course, we have to learn a lot about the genes we're editing before we can really improve outcomes. But the fact that we can do it and do it in a more reliable way and more effective way is you're right, both, you know, exciting and terrifying. And I do believe in 2019, yeah, we're probably going to have some news stories about this, about real results.
I mean, on one side, we might get a popular yellow. That would be awesome. That would be freaking awesome. Everybody would love that.
Forever puppies.
But, yeah. Forever puppies, too. Oh, my God. Forever puppies. The poopless forever puppy. And then, you know, there's
Man Bear Pig.
Another, you know, atrocities. They're just going to really separate that gap on a whole ridiculous level. And we'll live in some weird post-apocalyptic sci-fi. And what side will we be on? I mean, all right, so I was watching a sketch show. It was a new episode of Baron Von Sketch Show, which is this Canadian all-female sketch comedy crew. They're just fucking fantastic. But they had a sketch of it. It was, I forget what it was, if it was technology or startup or something, but it was 40 under 40. And they had, like, 7 people on the panel or something like that, and they went through all of them. And they're like, so, you know, I did this, and my parents paid for my school, and then they paid for that, and then the trust kicked in, and then I was able to finance and start my own fashion label. And then every other person after that was pretty much their story. They had rich parents, and then this one guy's all like, no, my story's different. I wasn't really that close with my parents. Oh, what was it? It's like, you know, what it was is, well, I had this aunt, and she had a lot of money, and she was really awesome, and she loved me. And she's pretty much who raised me, you know. It was her that really helped me do all this. And it was just like, if you don't know what 40 under 40 is, it's like 40 people that are under 40 years old that are insanely successful and just, like, broken barriers that are normally only broken by people in their 50s, 60s, 70s. Sometimes the list is 30 under 30. I doubt it's ever been 20 under 20, because that would just be depressing for everyone immediately. But yeah, and even though that's not the case all the time, I'm pretty sure it was because you look at that list enough, and just people have certain advantages, it makes it a little bit easier to excel a little bit faster. Let's not lie. And you start applying that to a whole, like, genetic factor where it's all like before they were even born, they had all these insane advantages, like, exponential gap between human beings. It's not even a wealth thing. It's going to be in their blood, like you said.
Yeah, family starts to mean a lot more again. There's a book by Nancy Kress, The Beggars in Spain, where they developed a genetic therapy that people born with this gene no longer had the need for sleep. They were sleepless. They could basically stay awake all 24 hours and work, think, read, do whatever. It gave those kids an advantage because they basically could study for an extra 8 hours if they wanted to, or spend more time or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like the advantage that all these millionaires were giving their kids, and they started becoming known as the sleepless. And they started meeting each other. And of course, like you were saying, like, they're all from wealthy families. They're all, like, really well. I mean, they're doing well in school and they're productive people, but I mean, they're also just from fabulously wealthy families. and they start being seen as the real problem solvers of the future. And it was an interesting novel. It gets kind of weird at the end, but it was kind of like, it was like a premise that was kind of that she explored. I think it was like 1989, and of course we've the movie Gattaca, which everyone kind of cites as like is another one where they look at the genetic inequality and the challenges of a society where you know you're superior by science. I mean, this was what was horrible about eugenics is they assumed they were superior because they were of Aryan stock or German stock, and they must be superior. And they just thought, they honestly thought there was some sort of science or wisdom to that. This one, we kind of dispelled that one for a few decades, and now we have a new one that could potentially give someone the basis for discrimination, prejudice, and these feelings of superiority. Yeah, I'm scared now.
No, I mean, seriously, and we haven't really been able to hold back any new technology from abuse yet. I mean, it just keeps on happening over and over. And so if this technology is advancing before we have any real grasp or institution that we feel is fair and balanced, I mean, it's just we have to assume the worst. And we have to start thinking about, I don't know, like legislation or just ways to cover our ass. It's nuts. Yeah, everything is equal parts fantastic and frightening. I had one on the list. I think might be the last one. Yeah, it was Cure for Paralysis. Now I know we hear this a lot. I know we hear this a lot of the time, but there's been really interesting stuff with nerves, and it would be really cool to start seeing just more advancement with it, because I feel like whether it's with sight or with motor skills of prosthetics and stuff, there's been some real crazy shit with nerves, and I feel like we're going to keep on seeing growth in that area. And even though I don't think cure is a really horrible, horrible word to be used in any of these articles, it's total clickbait, and it makes most scientists cringe, I would think. Still, it's worth mentioning that I think we're still going to continue to see interesting advances.
There you go. Yeah, that one... The reason I kind of skipped over that one is I think because as soon as I saw that, I'm like, we're not seeing that in 2019. And then when I read the blurb admitted that. I was like, this was total clickbait.
Yeah, but it's been like steady advancements. And I don't know if it's a logarithmic or, exponential or anything like that. But I keep on hearing real interesting articles with whether it's like visual, like resolution getting higher for that, or whether motor skills for prosthetics in advance and stuff. Like, I feel like they're starting to kind of crack the human nervous system better and better, and I think there's a bright future there.
I think there's already forms of paralysis and forms of restoring certain abilities to people that we've already been able to do. And I think I did just read of a new interface between, when the spinal cord has been severed, a new electrical interface that may allow people to walk again. There's no one says it's going to happen in 2019. It's going to be ready. But it is something that they feel like it is at least plausible within our lifetimes that paralysis might just be a thing of the past. All right. We're past the hour mark, so we should probably close it down. The other three were brain mapping, self-healing materials, and AI-enhanced closed-circuit television, AI-enhanced virtual care. You can read about those if you want. There was 15 of them, and we didn't really want to split an hour into 15 different segments, so we kind of picked our favorites and picked a few that we thought were just clickbait shit. So there you have it. That's our look at 2019 science-wise.
We could like recap on this at the end of 2019 and see how disappointing and pointless maybe the show was. That's definitely going to happen because we'll do this throughout the year, or at least keep doing the show, obviously. And then right around December 2019, we're at least going to scratch the surface of this. We probably won't dedicate a whole show to it because how sad it'll be.
For that one, we will drink.
It will be the holidays. I will have cookies and Brandy Alexanders.
Well, all right, man. Guess we can leave it at that. It's now time for our weird, awkward ending or close.
I mean, no, I didn't prepare anything. Oh, I wasn't supposed to, but bye.